News 18 Daybreak, the perfect way to get you started and informed for the day ahead.
Hello and welcome to News 18's morning podcast Daybreak. I'm Pathikrit Sengupta. Let's have a listen to some of the top stories at this time. The Supreme Court on Tuesday said it looks forward to conclude the hearing in the politically sensitive Ayodhya land dispute case today and asked the parties to wrap up their arguments. A five-judge constitution bench headed by Chief Justice Ranjan Gogoi has been hearing the Ram Janmabhoomi Babri Masjid title suit for 39 days and had earlier set the deadline to finish arguments on October 18. This was later brought forward to October 17, but the CJI on Tuesday indicated that the court would like to conclude all arguments by Wednesday instead of Thursday. Giving the time frame to the concerned parties, the apex court said it would extend the hearing duration and sit till 5 p.m. today to give time for final submissions and rejoinders to the Hindu and Muslim parties. The court also sat till 5 p.m. on Tuesday. The judgment will be reserved by the bench if the arguments conclude. The bench, also comprising Justices S.A. Bobde, D.Y. Chandrachur, Ashok Bhushan and S.A. Nazir, will have to pronounce the ruling by November 17, as the CJI will retire on that date. If the judgment is not delivered before his retirement, the entire matter would have to be heard afresh. The CJI has previously said the bench will have only 4 weeks to write the judgment, and it will be a miracle if the court delivers the judgment in this time frame. And close to 1,500 aggrieved residents of Gandhinagar in Mumbai's Worli area have decided to boycott next week's assembly elections after allegedly being left to fend for themselves since their slum colony was demolished in 2012. Aditya Thackeray, son of Shiv Sena chief Uddhav Thackeray, will make his electoral debut from this constituency in the October 21 Maharashtra polls. However, many residents here say they will not vote unless they get an assurance about their rehabilitation project. According to locals, their slum colony, consisting of more than 1,000 homes, was torn down in 2012 to make way for a 23-story slum rehabilitation authority building. But the developers stopped construction midway around 2 years ago due to lack of funds. After our homes were demolished, we were given Rs 15,000 for monthly rent till 2016, but they have stopped paying us for the past 3 years, said Gandhinagar resident Lakshman Golani. The building is not fully constructed and we don't know where to go, where to live. We don't have rent money nor a house, he said. Locals requested authorities that the families be shifted to transit camps as they had stopped receiving rent money, but they were left to fend for themselves, said Narayan Irkula, also a resident of the area. On the outskirts of Mumbai, around 30 housing societies in Panvel have also started a campaign to boycott the polls over lack of development. Banners displayed outside these apartment complexes have messages like "No road, no development, no vote" and "No water, no vote." According to locals, there are approximately 45,000 voters here. Residents say they have been urging authorities to address their problems, but after receiving no help, they have decided to boycott the elections to make themselves heard. Incidentally, Prime Minister Narendra Modi is slated to address a rally in the Panvel Assembly constituency today. And India expects to have formulated a policy within the next 2 weeks to attract foreign investment to its coal mining industry, Coal Minister Prahlad Joshi said on Tuesday. India's recently concluded thermal coal mine auctions received a tepid response, with 15 out of 21 attracting fewer than 3 bidders. Joshi said the government was looking to make investing in coal mines more attractive to bidders. "We have several small blocks which usually don't attract foreign investment. For that, we need bigger blocks," he said. Joshi said he expects India's coal demand to rise more than 21% from current levels to 1.2 billion tons in 2023, adding that coal would be necessary for the next 3 decades. President Donald Trump's decision to pull out of Syria radically realigns the balance of power in the country's northeast and creates a vacuum which Russia, Turkey and Iran are racing to fill. With Turkish forces pressing south from the border, the Kurds have invited troops from Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's Russian-backed government in from the south and the west. Assad's forces are exploiting the US retreat to seize back resource-rich territory they abandoned years ago. The area includes most of the Syrian lands that formed the caliphate of the Islamic State group, whose fighters have gone underground but vowed to stage a comeback. More than 10,000 Islamic State prisoners, including many hardened foreign jihadis whose Western governments refuse to take them back, are in prisons there, and tens of thousands of their family members are in camps. Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan says he wants to settle up to 2 million Syrian refugees, many of them Sunni Arabs, into the region targeted in the operation, territory which is currently controlled by Kurdish-led forces. Turkish troops and Ankara-backed Syrian rebels have focused in the first week of operations on driving Syrian Kurdish YPG fighters from two major border towns, Tel Abayed and Ras Al Ain, about 120 kilometers apart. Despite a chorus of global criticism, Erdogan says nothing will stop operations against Kurdish YPG fighters, considered terrorists by Ankara because of their links to guerrillas waging an insurgency in southeast Turkey. Erdogan has said Turkey will seize a border strip running hundreds of kilometers from Kobani in the west to Hasaka in the east and 30 to 35 kilometers deep inside Syria. The full withdrawal of US forces and deployment of the Syrian army is a major juncture in the Syrian conflict, restoring a foothold for Assad's government across the biggest swath of the country that had been outside its grasp. Assad's army, however, has been weakened by the attrition of prolonged conflict and now relies heavily on Russia, Iran, and Iran's Shiite militia allies, including Lebanon's Hezbollah. And golfer Tiger Woods has announced he will write a memoir billed by the publishers as a candid and intimate narrative of an outsized American life. A publication date was not given for Back, which is the first account from 15 times major winner Woods, who is now 43, and is being written with the full cooperation of his friends, family, and inner circle. This book is my definitive story. It is in my words and express my thoughts. It describes how I feel and what's happened in my life, Woods said in a statement. I've been working at it steadily, and I'm looking forward to continuing the process and creating a book that people will want to read. A child golfing prodigy, Woods went on to dominate the sport and has long since cemented his place as the greatest player of his generation and, arguably, of all time. Since Woods turned professional in 1996, he has virtually redefined the game. Not only did he usher in an era of multi-million dollar endorsements and lucrative appearance money, but his Afro-American Asian background spread the sport to an audience far beyond its traditional image of male, white, and middle class. Woods later went through a highly public divorce in 2010 after revelations of his marital infidelities convinced him to take a self-imposed hiatus from professional golf, a drunken driving arrest in 2017, and multiple knee and back surgeries that convinced many his best days were behind him. Yet, Woods made a stirring return to the top of the sporting world in April. Right, everyone, that's all for today, but we will be back again tomorrow with a fresh dose of news for you. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter Daybreak at news18.com and do follow the website for more news and developments. Thank you for listening and have a very good day.
News 18 Daybreak, the perfect way to get you started and informed for the day ahead.